Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The War Room with P-Mac, where we discuss off-season and in-season strategies and thought processes on how we get to the next level as the Chiefs, as Chiefs fans. We do it from the Chiefs' perspective. We do it from the Chiefs fan perspective. So, I am here with P-Mac. What's up, P-Mac?
What's up? What's up, Diz? And I want to say, go ahead. Out here in Lawrence, Kansas, out here in the land of the Jayhawks, and of course, we left early in the tournament and everything, whoop-de-womp-de. Better luck next year. Whatever, man. Mizzou ain't there anyway, so. So, anyway, I'm just messing with you. But anyway.
Hey, it's all good, man.
We both from the metro anyway, so we always have fun with these people. Anyway, I want to say thank you guys for jumping on here for today's seventh episode of The War Room with PMAC, presented by Chiefs Focus. And my guy Thiz, man, who's my co-host, man. Thiz and I will continue to provide you, the viewers, front office insight into the offseason needs, identifying how to put in the right pieces together that'll lead the Chiefs to becoming, hopefully becoming the first team to three-peat. Now that the first wave of the free agency craze is over, the Chiefs, in my opinion, is kind of a little so-so, but we still believe in the Chiefs right now because, you know, they bought in Irv Smith Jr., who was at the time one of the top three best tight ends in the 2019 draft. They signed Hollywood Brown, who was also one of the top receivers, even considered ranked higher than Mecole Hardman at the time. And the news that has gotten everybody all, you know, and what's going on right now, emotionally and whatever you guys call it, we traded Lajarius Sneed, and I think we got robbed, and I'll explain that later why. This is just my opinion. We were signed the homie Drew Tranquil, who has shown to prove to be a great, willing, weak side linebacker in the Chiefs scheme. Other than that, we stayed largely out of trying to make big name signings, but that's the thing. The Chiefs rarely even go after big name players. Anyway, if they do, once or twice per year or every other year. So that's just a thing, and that's what's going to lead us now into our first segment in regards to the Sneed situation.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Sneed is out. Sneed got traded from the Chiefs to the Titans for not a pick in this year's draft. But
– yeah.
A pick in next year's draft. Not a first round. Not a second. Not a third. The brother got traded for little to nothing.
This is the thing, bro. They switched from 250 to 221 in this year's draft. And next year's third round pick, which I'm okay with that, but you could have got better compensation, like at least a fifth or a fourth round pick for this year, or at least get an extra top 100 pick, a third round pick. But what do I know, right? But yeah, I don't know. I just feel like we got robbed out of that. I mean, I wasn't mad about Sneed getting traded because we've been talking about it. Should he stay or should he go? Or like we've been doing these scenarios on the shows. We were always was talking about behind the scenes, the compensation. What are y'all going to give up for him? Oh my gosh, man. When I saw that, I froze for 10 minutes looking at my notifications on my phone, really more mad about the compensation, man. I'm like, really? I know Brett Veach, our general manager, has a great track record. He's the best general manager in the NFL. But even some of the greats could take L's at some points. Michael Jordan took an L at moments, and it still made him better, and it motivated him to do better the next time so it won't happen again. I'm trying to figure out what's the plan behind all that, because now this man has agreed to go with the Titans for annually $19 million per year with $55 million guaranteed. Yes, the Chiefs got their $19.8 million back and everything else. Least cap space to not having the ninth or eighth most with $27 million. And yes, we need about $8 million to pay the rookies. And you take that $8 million away, you basically got back Sneed's salary. But You know, the Chiefs now have the opportunity to do exactly what they did in 2022 and spread the wealth around throughout all the roster spots, man.
Bro, I can tell you are in uproar about this. As much as you like to say that it is what it is, or we keep it moving or whatever.
Yeah.
Man, Chiefs Kingdom was not happy about this move.
No, bro. I mean, I've seen videos of girls crying, women crying, and fans crying.
And like, I'm sitting here watching this all unfold, my thought process was, I didn't know L'Jarius was loved that much around here. I don't remember hearing this love for him in 2022. And that's where I think the rise of L'Jarius really began. Yeah, we knew in 2021 that he was probably going to be really good, because he got picked in 2020. Yes. And lots of us really kind of figured he'd be good. But again, I didn't know that he was this beloved in Chiefs Kingdom, and that's okay. I do think the compensation was low. I absolutely think he got away from the Chiefs for pennies. When I say pennies, I mean, I would even say, damn it, bent pennies. Bent pennies.
Switching spots in the seventh round, really. That's almost similar to the John Gruden trade from the Raiders to the Buccaneers. It's like,
I didn't even like the, like, I get the trade, but that was more of a, I get the seventh round swap, but that was more of a formality, as it were, you know, as just one of those things. Well, we got to get something this year. We might as well just trade. No.
This is one of the most elite corners in the NFL, and there are other corners that have had these type of injuries, man. Are you kidding me? No, just lowballing, man.
Not to mention the Colts they were in talks with the Colts.
Chris Ballard, our old friend is over there. And I thought that's probably why it could have worked out, because he had that connection there. Or it could have been Miami, because Sam Madison is down there, the cornerback coach for the Dolphins, who had connections with us, you know. And
reportedly, it was for a third round pick with the Colts. And it was even further reported that, you know, Veach was trying to push for a second. Now, I will say this. I do think that L'Jarius might have been overvalued here in Kansas City. I'm not denying that in any way. He is a valuable asset, but I do think he was overvalued, and I do think the injury is what was stopping the real progress of the, like, second round talks. Or second round draft pick trade talks. And so that injury might have been deeper than what we know. But that franchise tag, as much as players don't want to hold on to it or don't want to be on it, it holds a lot of power for those players. The power, L'Jarius could have just said, nah, I'm good. I'm not going to the Titans. I don't care who. If the Raiders were to give you a first round pick, I don't want to go there. So I don't have to trade. I don't have to sign this franchise tag. And the thing about the contract negotiations is you can negotiate ahead of time before they trade. So apparently that's what happened. And L'Jarius did do the best thing for his camp. And I think I just think the Chiefs did what's best for him. Like, I don't think this was one of those situations where, like, look, we're going to get a second, third round pick, something like this for him. I think it was more of a situation where let's get the best thing that we can get out of this. He's not going to be here. We don't want his money on the books. Because that handcuffs us unless we go restructure some people. And you don't want to get – you get into the habit of it, but you don't want to stay there. So – but I know Legarius was a fan favorite. I don't know – again, I don't know when it happened. I don't know. I think it probably – I felt like it happened in the AFC Championship. But maybe it happened before then. I don't know. I think I'm taking – you know what? I feel like I'm not taking y'all serious as I should. It happened before then. It happened probably in one of those December games, probably early December, where Legarius was just shutting down people, and then somebody threw up the graphic that said Legarius been on number one. Actually, yeah. Rewind that. It probably happened back in the Minnesota game. That's when I think everybody started.
Especially when he shut down Justin Jefferson, him, and McDuffie.
That's where I think the love came from, because Justin Jefferson was on the top of his game, and he's the best
receiver in football right now, man. Still,
and he shut him down. So,
and before that, Devontae Adams, it was 2021 when he was playing with the Packers.
Absolutely.
He shut him down. I was there in person. I'm like, Legarius, man. Even more, too.
And that's the thing.
Just considering what Snead did to shut down those opposing number one receivers last season, his loss is a big blow. Just simple as that, man. So.
Yeah, and Chiefs Kingdom feels it. Chiefs Kingdom feels it. So
they're feeling it.
Obviously, that leaves a gaping hole in the defense, because I think – and by the by, with the stay or go, with the stay or go situation with Chris Jones and with Snead, it was always going to be Jones.
Yeah.
Sorry. I mean, we talked about it a little bit. It was always going to be Jones. Kansas City has been – cornerback university over the last four seasons. We were able to since 2019?
Yeah.
Maybe before then. But
it started with when Veach got a Charvarius Ward.
Charvarius Ward. And they he was able to develop him into a legit number two corner. And then from there, Legarius got drafted. We had Charvarius. And then after that, we got the big dog, the big homie, McDuffie. And it's just, we're just going to keep rolling with it. And I do think they will pick another CB. But the question now is, who's CB2?
That's right. And that leads me to say, what's next? Now that's need. Has left Kansas City with two championship rings. The Chiefs will need to add one more cornerback to a room that is now in need for some depth in terms of competition next to Trent McDuffie. There are some options, you know, behind McDuffie and Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams. You know, all three came from the 2022 draft class, and Watson and Williams could have the opportunity to take elevated roles, including safety Shamari Conner, as the team's new slot corner, which pushes McDuffie on the outside, which I'm telling you, you thought he was something in the slot. This man was like Darrell Revis, Stephon Gilmore, shutting dudes down at Washington at the outside, which is why I think this is going to be good. Like, what's the good and the bad of this? McDuffie goes on the outside, Conner goes into the slot. But that leaves the question, who's the other guy on the opposite side, on the outside of McDuffie, because he's going to be the most targeted when they go against opposing quarterbacks, especially like going against Devontae Adams, or let's say we go against Justin Jefferson again. They're definitely going to target that side. So you got Watson and Williams, as well as Eko Boydo. You know, shout out to my guy who is from Lawrence, Kansas, Nazi Johnson, who people are being given a lot of love to, who they said that was supposed to be the guy opposite McDuffie and Snead before he tore his ACL, and there's Nick Jones. They could be very serviceable depth options. However, that doesn't mean that improvements aren't pursued. The Chiefs need to find another starter-level cornerback opposite McDuffie before the season begins. And in this draft class, there are plenty of cornerbacks that the Chiefs could get in this draft. And also, the Chiefs lost Mike Edwards to the Buffalo Bills. And with Brian Cook expected to return from his ankle injury to start at free safety, and Justin Reed returning on a contract year, he's got 1 year left on his contract. You know, the Chiefs have their starting safeties, you could say for now. Behind them, Deion Bush coming back after that interception on Lamar in the AFC Championship game. I knew he had that skill set. It was just a matter of time when they used him, and he played up. And you saw how well he could play in the deep middle. While Connor is your more traditional do-it-all safety, free safety, strong safety, in the slot, split out as a corner, or even line up as a defensive lineman, like as a legit pass rusher, he brings that depth behind Cook. Both are decent depth options, but adding another safety who is versatile enough to play both the single high and in the box is what we need too, especially to add that competition. And also the good news of all of this with the Snead news is that for the Chiefs, they have the money and they can get players at discounts, you know, like bring back Donovan Smith, bring back Mike Dana. Shoot, if you want to, maybe go after Patrick Peterson or Stephon Gilmore on a cheap deal. If you want to go that route. Okay, I see you like, nah. I know what Veach says about age and everything else like that, but age is nothing but a number. If you can ball, you can ball. That's how I look at it. Kelsey's 35, bro. So, I mean, come on.
But he's homegrown. Kelsey's 35, but he's drafted here.
Right.
Here. You know, that's one of those things. With those older elder statesmen, you're going to be talking about guys that have been drafted and they're key cogs in this clock, in the clockwork that we have in the Chiefs. So you got Chris Jones, who will be 33 when his contract ends, and you got Travis Kelce, who is knocking on heaven's door, as it were, when it comes to retirement, right?
So, he'll be 36 when his contract expires.
That's knocking on heaven's door for sure. But Brett Veach is not in the mold of signing these guys to long-term deals.
Not to or long-term even deals, but just a one.
Or extensions. Right. There's a, like I know Veach has a setup that he wants to go by, period. And normally it doesn't involve guys over 30, right? It doesn't involve guys over 30. But these guys that he's got here are key cogs in the Chiefs organization, Travis Kelce and Chris Jones. Everybody else is expendable. Everybody else is basically on Expendables 5. You know what I mean? They're over there side co-hosting with Sylvester Stallone. And
they got 50 Cent in there with Terry Crews.
they all on that movie. So
you're not in prison anymore, Damon.
So when you think about that, I don't see them bringing in anybody over 30. But Donovan Smith being brought back is a possibility, just because of what happened at the end of the year. Not based on what happened before. But the price, given the price, as well as the postseason, that's what we're talking about. That's the reason. And it also gives your in-house guy, whose name escapes me. He's a rookie. He was a rookie last season.
Right.
What is his name?
Felix Anu DK Uzama?
No, I'm talking about the defensive line, or the offensive lineman, but we're not talking about offensive line. That's who I'm talking about. So, but as far as CB2, we've got CB2 in house. Let's say we get to a situation, because here's the thing: when you are already the team of the decade, which we are, okay?
Yes,
we are the team of this decade. When you're already there and you're pushing for a three-peat,
right?
Your opposition is going to grow immensely.
Yes.
So the story was last year when we drafted, was it last year? I think it was last year when we drafted
Connor.
Mm-mm. Our first one, Felix Anudike Uzomah. When we drafted him,
right.
Veach wanted to move up to the like 25th pick.
Madison Smith.
And he wanted to trade with the Cowboys.
Yeah.
The Cowboys said no. And this is all theoretically. Like, this is all, I wasn't in that room. I wasn't on that phone. I don't know nothing. Right.
So maybe Jerry feels some way after letting Ward walk. So, I mean, hey, absolutely. That's on you, Jerry.
Absolutely. Right. So you look at this, you look at all this stuff, and you realize that the Chiefs out here turning seventh round picks, borderline UDFAs, to guys that are getting paid. Also, you realize that they are now, and this is a shot at the Cowboys, they are now taking over your spot of where you were 30 years ago, possibly taking over. Anyway, we'll not talk about that. I'm just hypothesizing, but teams don't want the Chiefs to be three-peat champions.
No, they don't.
Also, we didn't look like a team that was going to go back to back last season.
We didn't, bro. I thought we was like, man, a little more like we're not even gonna make the playoffs the way we're
right.
playing. That's it didn't even look with the that drops. Way. It didn't even look that way.
But if you look at it, they kept leaving this. They kept leaving the door open. So what did the Chiefs do? They climbed back in there. They figured it out, and here we are. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying this to say, please expect the opposition to grow, to do nothing but grow from here. Okay,
absolutely.
People are not going to work with
the Raiders, man. Trust me, my cousin Devontae, he'll let you know. The Raiders right now, after the Snead move, he's like, oh yeah, it's almost like we feel like this is open season now. We should be making some more moves, and they got a little more money than us in cap space too. So but that's something to consider, right?
You got to look at it like it's open season now. Like the Chiefs are weak theoretically because they got to get rid of. Because Snead was a major part of the organization. And look at the defense. They were a major part of the defense. The offense, they still don't feel like we got it together. They still think that there's something left to be desired, like in the smaller circles. So we got to figure out how we overcome that. And let's just throw this out there.
Go ahead.
And those teams with legendary defenses.
Mm-hmm.
They typically don't last more than one or two years.
Yeah, the LOB was a great example of that. So it's like, for me, for example, and like before we move on like to the next segment, right? The one good thing I would say is on this whole thing, right, in regards to that is with trading Snead, at least the reason why we didn't sign him to that long-term deal because Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, They're on their final years of the rookie deal. And Nick Bolton.
Don't forget my new boy.
Nick Bolton. Man. Hey, our Ray Lewis? Yeah, bro. Yes. Our Ray Lewis. I love Nick, bro. When I saw his playing style, I said, dude, that's our Ray Lewis. And I predicted on my original Twitter post, that's going to be our first pick in the 2021 draft for the Chiefs. I love Nick. So, yeah, that's one of the reasons why you got to do that. I mean, you can still get that same level of defense because that's the thing about what McDuffie and Snead as a duo brought. Not just the LOB-like defensive mindset, but with those two out there, they kind of gave you glimpses of Aqib Talib and Chris Harris Jr., the no-fly zone that the Broncos did. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's what I like. So it's like, even though, yes, we need that player that Snead brought, but like I said, find another starter level cornerback, but for pennies with a draft pick. You just got to find the right guy. Veach found it with Snead and McDuffie. He could do it again in this draft.
Absolutely. So the concept is we're just looking for CB2. We know who CB1 is, and that is McDuffie.
Now, Taylor Watson to me is like CB2 from now because since week 9, he's actually played at the level of like where Snead was at. Like, he did not allow a touchdown, and maybe it was probably not until the Super Bowl. Probably he didn't even allow a touchdown in that Super Bowl. But if you watch him since week 9, he's played at an elite level. And if he continues to ride that momentum into this coming year, then he might be that guy. But other than that, we still need to bring in another guy in the draft for competition. Competition makes it perfect. Hey, I make you better, you make me better. So, hey, let's do it. Let's go.
There's a lot of things, a lot of cogs moving. So We got to figure out who CB2 is. But now I think it's time to move on to our next segment, which is Draft Gems.
Yes, sir. These Draft Gems. You guys know out there, every year, many of today's NFL stars were first-round picks. There are plenty of others who come from a much humble draft slot. You know, there are guys on day three, the round four through seven guys of those certain players in each draft. And when I see a good player fall into a favorable situation on day three, everybody's intended to go up, just like the guys of the past or for any other 31 teams besides the Chiefs out there. Like, if you look at from the Veach era, Nick Algaretti, seventh round pick, 216th pick overall, 2019. My man has three Super Bowl rings going to the freaking Commanders. Le'Jarius Sneed, fourth round, 138th pick, 2020.
For the Commanders, they love our offensive linemen.
Yes, I know Algaretti and as Wiley, I know.
Yeah, man. As of late, yeah.
As of late. You know, Le'Jarius Sneed now going to the Titans, two-time world champion. You know, Mike Dana, two-time world champion. He's still out there, fifth round, 177th pick. Trey Smith, probably the biggest steal of the 2021 draft in the sixth round, 226th overall. And last but not least, Isaiah Feed the Beast Pacheco, seventh round, 251st pick. You know, these are the examples of players that Veach found in those rounds that became those gems for the Chiefs and that become fan favorites. So by that, here are five players who I believe that could develop into stars down the line for the Chiefs to consider. And let's start with Luke McCaffrey, wide receiver from Rice. After releasing MVS before the offseason and signing Hollywood Brown during the first wave of free agency, we still put ourselves in the market to draft MVS's replacement still, because you got to consider Brown is on 1 year. And of the three receivers the Chiefs might consider to take on day three, Luke McCaffrey, the brother of Christian McCaffrey and the son of Ed McCaffrey, has an opportunity to impress in camp if the Chiefs get him and find catches as a rookie. The former Rice standout showed off his well-rounded skill set at the Senior Bowl. He, like, if you saw this play in the Senior Bowl, he made like a one-handed grab that reminded me of Doug Baldwin in the wild card game against the Minnesota Vikings. He jumped in the air and caught it one-handed. That shows you one of his biggest skill sets. Just like last episode, I talked about contested catchers like the Jalen Polks from Washington or, you know, Xavier Leggetts. That is the type of player he is. And if you can find him in the fifth round, that's the type of player. And the thing about him is after his first season with the Owls, he changed from quarterback to receiver. Mm-hmm. Last season, he caught 68 passes for almost 1,000 yards, 963, 12 touchdowns, and he helped Rice reached the first responder bowl. He believes his experience under center has allowed him to become a better wide receiver. He's 6'2", 198, runs a 4.46 40-yard dash, and a pedigree is always a welcome sight. His physical tools and the ability to run the routes at all three levels of the field, the short, intermediate, and the deep, should never be underestimated, especially his contested catchability. As a matter of fact, he finished top five among the draft-eligible wide receivers in contested catches. He also could create yards after the catch and has a natural feel for finding opens versus the zone. And he was a team captain last season. So McCaffrey could be battling for Justin Watson's spot in training camp if he's drafted with a solid chance of getting quality playing time.
With that, I definitely saw Luke McCaffrey as a change of scenery for the gentleman you just mentioned. What's the name?
MVS.
Not MVS. Watson.
Watson, yes.
Yeah. Like,
I think he would be an upgrade from Watson. That's just me.
And I understand that Watson is not getting paid a whole heck of a lot of money. I get it. Justin Watson. But the thing about it is, if you can get younger at a position, like as we get older, everything's going to set in a little bit more. So whenever you can get younger at a position, it's probably better. And in the NFL, when we talk about getting younger, you're also going to get more cost efficient with going younger. So in this situation, I would call that to be a good thing. I really would, because at the end of the day, you're going to have to figure out how to get younger. You're going to have to figure out how you navigate this thing financially and with your age. Because, again, that's one of the things Beach does not do is keep 30-year-olds. And so you just keep it moving. And so I think I was watching Luke McCaffrey's film. And, I definitely see a lot of Justin Watson in him. I definitely see a lot of the traits that Justin Watson has, but he could probably – it says running back, so I apologize about that. That's wrong.
It's fine. It's fine, man.
I know that this kid, when I saw his tape, he finds ways to fit through slots that really aren't supposed to be gotten through as a wide receiver.
Yeah.
He has great hands, and – he can run like a running back. He can find his route, his way through traffic like a running back. That's what threw me off with the running back thing.
You could do all that, and then also make freak contested catches, like mossing people.
Reminded me a lot of those shifty New England guys.
He's like a mixture of Chris Hogan and Julian Edelman, because Julian Edelman used to be a quarterback going to wide receiver, and that's what I thought of when I saw that about McCaffrey.
Not only that, but it opens the door for the one or two play situation where Andy Reid might want to do a trick play or something specific.
And he throws a pass. Amendola to Edelman against the Ravens.
I had film on him throwing too. His throwing is not bad. So, with that being said, I actually like Luke McCaffrey a lot. He could serve a specific role where we need him to serve. And, he's not a running back. He's a wide receiver, but he can serve that role too. Just throwing that out there. But anyway, let's move on to number two. Just in the interest of time.
All right. And I know you're going to like this one, man, because we all know protecting the quarterback is vital to NFL success. The Chiefs may have the opportunity to draft a blue chip offensive lineman at number 32 or make a bold move to move up into the top 10 to 15 range. Other enticing options may have them go elsewhere on the first night. If it's not the case, other solid options await them in those later rounds, you know, for much needed steadiness up front. And one of those solutions is a guy from Mizzou by the name of left tackle Javon Foster. One of the most important things to have success at as offensive lineman in the NFL, feet. You can't teach quickness or athleticism. You need to just be smooth. That's the gist of what you need from every NFL coach, every scout, player, when looking at offensive line positions. You need a player who can get to his area cleanly and quickly. Case in point, the 2013 NFL draft. The Chiefs took the athlete, you know, the one with the, you know, 40-yard dash, the better measurables in Eric Fisher, and then the more polished technician, Luke Jokel. And we all knew, why the Chiefs did that, and we all saw that they went with the athlete then the technician, and, you know, Eric Fisher led us, you know, to that first Super Bowl win in 50 years, and also he was part of that team that we could have had that first back-to-back in 2020 before he got hurt in that Bills game. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Chiefs looked at the technician this time in Foster. That's the one thing about Foster, he's a technician. I like his ability to move from his pre-snap to his position on the corners, and also take away edge rushers. As a matter of fact, he just thrives on being physical at the line of scrimmage, bro. He almost has 35-inch arms. I think that's going to intrigue Brett and Andy. And despite his 5.3 40 time, he moves very well with quickness. That's the lateral quickness, showing the fluid feet needed to dominate in space against those quicker defenders, especially on twists and stunts. That's very impressive. I mean, he holds his own. He has improved his pass rushing skills over the last few years, and his mental processing is just great. And his athleticism and patience, you know, will fit well in our zone blocking scheme. And Foster's angles in the run game would help out as well. He would need some coaching up from Andy Heck, but he would be one of the most talented projects given to Heck throughout the years.
I think with a guy like Javon Foster, there is going to be a level of up coaching that needs to happen. And it's exactly what you said. He's going to have to be up coach, but he still can be a first round pick. I do think he tends to overextend sometimes. I think he overextends, tries to, he's got long arms, so I don't know why he tries to overextend or why he tries to extend. He's got long arms, but sometimes I see the overextension sometimes, and that can lead to overstepping with his foot technique. He's not consistently a bad foot technician. It's just when he gets in those overextensions, he tries to make that up with his feet. And, you know, those are things that coaching is supposed to coach out of you. Like, Let's look back to 2017. Patrick Mahomes, what happened? You know, sloppy footwork. Well, where are we at now? You know, let's I'm not saying these things to discourage him or get him there. I'm just looking at it for what it is. And if he falls to us, I'm here for it. I'm here for it. Because I mean, I definitely think this is something. I said first round earlier. I did not mean first round. I'm thinking third round. I said first. I meant third. I think Javon Foster, you could, because these are draft gems, and we're talking about from the fourth round to the seventh round. But I could see Javon Foster and somebody pushing to get him in the third. Yeah. If you have a good enough offensive line coach like we do, Javon Foster would be an absolute gem for you.
Yes.
Let's move on to the next one.
All right. And here's another famous name that's here. And we all know Isaiah Pacheco is the man for the Chiefs, being a former mid, late round gem himself. But to keep him at his best, the Chiefs will need a runner who is elusive, who could pick up tough yards as a backup and catch passes out of the backfield. That's where Frank Gore Jr., the son of former 49ers legend Frank Gore, comes in. Frank Gore Jr. is a tremendous running back. He runs hard. He breaks tackles, has great balance. He's very hard to get on the ground. And despite his small frame, he could do everything you want a running back to do. He could also run downhill and stretch the field and run outside. Man, the other night when me and Devontae were watching the Shrine Bowl, he captured our attention. Like, man, he might be the Pacheco of this draft class, because he dominated, and I think he won the Shrine Bowl Offensive MVP that game. He was very dominant. He can run routes like a receiver. He has great hands, and after the catch, he could make the first defender miss. He could pass protect with mental processing to identify who he needs to pick up. He's willing to do everything. He's just that great. He's just a great player, almost like his dad, and he's learned that from his dad. And I feel like Gore Jr. would help diversify the running back group, and he has the ability to offer legitimate running back two versatility right away if the Chiefs were to get him, like in the fifth round, or if they could try to find a way to get a sixth round pick, which the Chiefs don't have, and try to get him there, why not?
Interesting. One thing about Frank Gore Jr. is I think that he's a bowling ball, man. He is a bowling ball. Which is great in one sense, but I think there is another sense where when you offer him Pacheco, when you got a guy like Pacheco, because he doesn't offer a lot of wiggle room either. Like, he's not a guy with a lot of wiggle. Frank Gore Jr., he's a kid that, like I said, bowling ball, straight up. Like, you're in his way, he can run you over, and he will run you over. Lot like his dad, but
yes,
you know, I do wonder sometimes if he's the guy that Andy Reid would want, because you tend to have one guy that could do one thing and the other running back that could, you know, work between the tackles. And Frank Gore Jr. works outside of tackles a lot. Once he hits that first hit, he's looking to get outside. And once he gets outside, it's hard to get him down. So
yeah,
I do love the pick. I do wonder about his wiggle a little bit, but if the Chiefs made this pick, I'd be all for it.
Oh, trust me, I know the Raiders will want to take him.
I
think the Raiders are watching our move, I think that's what they're doing. I think we need to watch them, because I truly think they might try to come after us this year now. So I'm just saying, man.
I feel the same way.
Low key a secret Chiefs fan, but I'm just messing with him though. But no,
I don't think the Raiders are where they think they are. I don't think they're where they think they are. But if they pick up the right quarterback this offseason, then they could be further along than they thought they were. Yeah. But it all hinges on that. Let's keep it moving.
Let's do it.
We're in the interest of time right now.
Yeah. So while the potential early Chiefs picks could have higher expectation, Penn State's Theo Johnson's complete skill set could make him one of the biggest steals of the entire draft, giving them incredible value in between range 4-5. With the size and skills to play inline tight end or in the slot, Johnson checks the box of a potential number one target at the next level. Johnson wasn't targeted all too often throughout his career at Penn State, but when he was, this man had a 139.9 passer rating on his targets. That's the second best behind any other tight ends in this draft class, behind Brock Bowers, who has a 148.9 rating. With the departure of Jody Fortson and Irv Smith Jr. and Noah Gray on one-year deals, the Chiefs should have a wide-open race for their number two spot behind Kelsey, and Johnson could be that perfect candidate. He's a technician. He takes pride in his routes, and he'll manipulate you in different ways with his 4.57 40-yard times speed, explosive, almost 40-inch vertical jump, 39.5 inches, at 6'6", 259 pounds. Johnson could be a future starting tight end that offensive gurus win with in a scheme that utilizes his versatility in aligning to get the ball in his hands in open space and capitalize on his yard after the catch ability.
Here's my thing about Theo. I'm going to tell you, I like this kid. And I like Theo Johnson more than I like any of these other guys you talked about, even Javon Foster. Like, I know that's a Mizzou guy, but Theo, I got introduced to Theo probably mid-year this year, or mid-season last year.
Yeah.
Last season for college. And I just the way dude can get upfield so quickly, just the long elongated gait, just the way he runs, there's not a lot of wasted motion there. There's not a lot of wasted motion with Theo Johnson. Like, he's all about catching the ball and seeing if he can get upfield. And he sees the end zone. He's taking the shortest route to it. I love that. And I hate going into a draft where people think, oh yeah, we gotta get Travis Kelce's replacement. I'm not looking at it like that. I'm looking at it from an aspect of not to replace him necessarily, but to learn from him. And because that's what Travis does. Travis doesn't always necessarily turn around and head straight for the end zone. He looks at ways to be elusive. And it's something he's done over the past 3-4 years. And Theo has been finding his way. He can find his way into the end zone a lot. And I really like that, because we need a better production with our red zone efficiency. We have a problem with red zone efficiency. So In the interest of time, we're going to keep it moving, man. I like Theo Johnson a lot.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So this last one, this last gem right here, with Willie Gay leaving in free agency, if you like speed, quickness, and a tackler that really misses the ball carrier, you will find Kentucky's Trayvon Wallace intriguing. In my estimation, Wallace's game tape was of the quality of a day two, rounds two to three pick, but concerns about the heart. Does he have the heart to play the game like might scare some teams off him? Some people say he's soft, but he was a combine warrior, ran a 4.5140 at over 240 pounds, 10 by 7 broad jump, and 37.5-inch vertical jump. He could be a solid rotational piece. You know, he has a good frame. 33-inch arms. Shows decent movement skills, especially in man coverage. He has good instincts overall with the mental processing against play action. Has the ability to quickly read the run plays to put himself into position to make the tackles. But his traits are average at best because, once again, he is soft at the point of attack. He lacks the strength to hold his ground against offensive alignment. And he might have the same problem, probably worse, in the NFL. And plus, he's over 240 pounds, which is big for the modern-day linebacker of today, and also upright Spags alley of type of linebackers he wants. He needs to be unblocked to make plays, making it very reliant on his instincts as a run defender. So he will need to improve his mental process, his mental toughness, before he joins an NFL roster. But I believe Spags and Brandon Daly could bank on their ability to get the most out of him and develop a stellar athlete.
I had no, when you said he was soft, he doesn't play.
I didn't mean it like, I don't mean it like that, but that's what they say in the scouting reports.
You don't have to, you good. I was just shocked to hear it. Cause the way dude plays, he attacks the ball. Okay.
He does.
He attacks the ball. And I wish I had my replays coming up here cause, he attacks the ball from what I saw. Now, he is a little heavy for an NFL linebacker. That's the problem.
Yeah.
At that size for a linebacker, you'll be looking mm-hmm. you could be looking at a lot of injuries.
That size.
Just the kinesiology of it, you know, just that part of it. You could be looking at a very injury prone player. And if what you say is true about his mental toughness, he could be opening himself up to being more susceptible to injuries because he's not playing 100%. Now, to be fair, his highlights I even looked back at some game film. I did not see a guy that's not 100% in. You know, I didn't see a guy that was soft. But to be fair, I did not watch Trayvon Wallace through the season. So I'm only going off of his best stuff, and that's what you're going to see on YouTube. So, but from the good traits are the great traits. He's strong. He's not going to take on any offensive linemen, but he can find the ball. He has that Nick Bolton aspect to him where he finds the ball and he's quick, so he could get there pretty quickly. And with his size, if he gets to you quickly and if he is determined to take you down, with his size he's going to take you down. So he can be a short tackler sometimes, but if his heart's not in it, you're not going to see that on the field, and that would worry me and make his draft stock fall a little bit for me. So, mm-hmm. I definitely was shocked when I heard you say they'd say he might be a little soft.
I'm not saying he's soft. I'm reading from what the scouting report said.
That's why I said I was shocked when I watched his highlights. I didn't see a guy that might be
soft. I know, right? He was on the top 100 college football freak list, too. That's where I saw his name before I read the scouting report. It was like,
I was shocked to hear that, but that's all right. So that was Draft Gems.
Yes, sir.
Rounds 4 through 7, Draft Gems. Now, on to our last part of the show, the best part of the show.
Yes, sir.
P-Max Mock Draft 6.0.
Yes, sir. All right. And with pick 32, the Kansas City Chiefs select Donnie Mitchell, wide receiver from Texas. Man, got to give Mahomes weapons. And the dynamic Mitchell from Texas could be a more capable receiver than MVS alongside super sophomore Rashee Rice. They would provide Coach Andy Reid a young and formidable 1-2 punch for years. Mitchell has a class wide receiver built with great speed and a defender's mentality similar to what Julio Jones did. Mitchell put on a fantastic showing in Indy almost a month ago, recording a 4.34 second 40-yard dash and an 11-foot-4 broad jump to lead all receivers. He did that at 6'2", 205 pounds. His numbers in the tape put him in the first-round conversation. He is physical and tough, but also shows a blend of finesse and pure speed that make him a threat within all areas of the field. Good hands, rarely drops the ball, only one drop on 78 targets last season with Texas, showing that he's capable of being a number one future wide receiver. I think Adonis could be the best receiver in this draft class. Big, fast, strong, great ability on the sideline. He's such a great competitor. He wants the ball thrown to him. So I like Adonis. A.D. Mitchell, Adonis Mitchell.
Adonis
Mitchell, okay.
Yeah.
A.D. Mitchell, man.
That's how people pronounce it, A.D. With Adonai, man, the part that stands out to me is he rarely drops balls.
Yes.
That's the part that stands out to me. And you're going to need that this season. Like, you're going to need that. And I'm going to tell you, defenses are honing in on the Chiefs on that. Like, that's going to happen. So I do think he's almost the perfect size for a wide receiver, like a prototypical wide receiver. And then we got if we make Rashee our more physical presence, he could be your speedster, and then you still got Hollywood Brown. I actually, as much as I like Xavier Worthy, Adonai Mitchell is one of those guys that, like, I don't want to call him a value pick because he's not, but I do think, as we get closer to the draft, I believe that Xavier Worthy's stock is going to rise, right? I do think Xavier Worthy's stock is going to rise, and it's just going to price us out of him. But a guy like Adonai Mitchell is very possible.
Adonai Mitchell, okay.
He'll be there at 32. It's very possible he'll be there at 32 for us to pick. Possibly even in the second round, if we can move up to pick number 34, 36, through 40. He's not going to last a super long time, but if we can get him at 32, I'd be okay with it.
All right. Now this, because of the Snead situation, and I did this with the PFF mock draft simulator, and when I saw this guy's name, and he's one of the popular names at the cornerback position in this draft class, I said, I can't pass up on this opportunity. This is that opposite level starting corner, opposite McDuffie, and that's none other than Kyree Jackson, cornerback from Oregon. He's clearly one of the top cornerbacks coming out this year, and there might not be a team more desperate than the Chiefs after losing him to the Titans. Jackson is a long corner who gets his hands on the ball and physical despite being under 200 pounds. But he has very good mental toughness, competitiveness, effort, physical toughness, especially on third down versus very good receivers with a blend of foot, speed, change of direction, his play strength. He ups his game, displaying very good man coverage, press, and off zone coverage, and fights through the catch until the whistle blows. He'll fight until the whistle blows. He's like that Richard Sherman, Brandon Browner, LOB, Seahawk cornerback type with the lengthy guys who get in your face, jam you at the line of scrimmage. And the Chiefs are in a particular spot because they need early contributors at cornerback. But Jackson is such an ideal fit for what they do now. His size, his length, and the physicality match exactly how they often deploy their cornerbacks on the boundary. Match that with his comfort in zone coverage to round out their coverage portfolio, and it's hard to design a much better prospect for the team but Jackson with the Chiefs. So imagine Jackson with McDuffie and Connor, and also the rotation with Watson and Williams. will be straight and you get him on the rookie contract, I would love to get Kyrie Jackson.
I like Kyrie Jackson, and I like – I'm not even going to say his weaknesses. What I am going to say is I like him – when I think about it, I like him opposite McDuffie.
Yes.
Like, all the rest of that stuff, I do not believe in shutting down. Like, I ain't going to say I don't believe it. I do, if that's your strong suit, shutting down the side of the field. Like, I do believe in that. But with this guy, you'll be able to have the option to do whatever you want with your cornerbacks. Whether you want to put McDuffie on your best receiver, if this guy can come in, if Kyrie Jackson can come in and you get him tested early, the same way you get him tested, the same way you did with McDuffie last season, mm-hmm. Get him tested and get him out there early. Let him learn his game, see how strong these receivers are, and let him rise to the challenge. I think that him and McDuffie could be something to be had for years to come.
Yes.
I was shocked at how long the dude's arms are. Super long, and he's super strong.
He has the same length of Brandon Browner, which is 32 1/4, and Richard Sherman has just got 32-inch arms. I was like, dude,
and his
Jackson's got longer arms than freaking Richard Sherman? I'm like, yes, that's what I'm talking about right there.
He jammed somebody on the line, and his arms, they're just so long, which also helps you with the contested jump balls. It helps you with those for wide receivers. So, look, man, I like Kyrie a lot.
Yes, sir.
So let's go to our third one.
All right, and last but not least, to finish off with this episode, with pick number 95, the Chiefs continue with the running back third round selection tradition. Episode 5, it was Blake. I'm sorry, bro. I got to do it, bro. Maybe I'm just trying to send a message to the team, bro.
It's all good.
Episode 5, it was Blake Corum. Episode 6, it was Bucky Irving. This time, it's USC running back Marshawn Lloyd. Not Lynch, Lloyd. Lloyd has exceptional lateral agility, great quick feet that work as a weapon in the open field, whether he's running or catching out of the backfield, also between the tackles. Good vision, setting the blocks and exploding into space. A very physical runner. Bench press 25 reps on 225, stronger than some of these defensive linemen and some of the offensive linemen. He seeks out contact. His physical brand of football plays between the tackles and short yardages. He's a finisher, a very good pass catcher with untapped potential and tremendous upside, which is just like DeAndre Swift. When he came out of Georgia, you saw what Swift did. He had the same untapped potential as a pass catcher. Now he's a Pro Bowler. Played with the Eagles last season, now a 3-year contract with the Bears. That's who Marshawn Lloyd reminds me of. Also, there's a bit of Pacheco that reminds me of. You know, both Pacheco and Lloyd needed to work on their pass protection coming out, but as you see, Pacheco's gotten better. I could see the same for Lloyd, because that's the one thing that's killing him. Probably is dropping his stock. But when you look at his running style, it kind of gives you not just DeAndre Swift vibes, but the home run runs kind of reminds you of Damian Williams. The homie, 2-6, that got us that close out that Super Bowl with that 38-yard run against the Niners, and those explosive runs, man. Like, that's what he reminds me of. And he's likely gone before the Chiefs would invest in realistically, but if they were to invest, he'd be a fantastic addition to the running back room.
Basically, everything you said, I agree with. My only issue is one other thing. That just, you mentioned his catching ability, right? And you mentioned his blocking. But sometimes I worry about his ball security.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he fumbles, but I am saying the ball security, the way he carries the ball is kind of eh. But I haven't looked up his number fumbles. I haven't looked up his number, but just looking at the way he carries the ball, it just makes me a little bit nervous. And that's one of the
nervous.
And that's one of the things based upon. And I'm saying this as I just recently watched Inside the NFL Super Bowl 58, I watched that on Inside the NFL, and Pacheco had that fumble. It was a rip, but, you know, but anyway. So that's why I say that. But the dude has some great feet, and his football IQ is amazing. So I do like Marshawn Lloyd a lot. Very, very powerful legs, super powerful legs.
Powerful legs, low center of gravity. That's basically what I saw from him. That remind me of Dame is that low center of gravity, where they try to bring Dame down, he would not go down. He already stretched the ball out, too. That's what Dame would do, man. And that's what I like about Marshawn.
But with that, when they said that he doesn't give up on a play and that he has strong legs, that also leaves the tendency to be ripped out. So, I'm not saying that will be a problem, but it could be. So
they also said the same about Pacheco, because I saw Tay where he was fumbling the ball, but I thought, the Chiefs will work with that. He just has that potential, man. And here we are now, man.
No draft pick is a finished product, okay? Don't think I'm saying that. Please don't think I'm saying that.
But
for everybody watching, don't think I'm saying that. Everybody, a draft pick is just the beginning of what they will be as a player. So I do like what Lloyd brings to the table.
Yes.
With that closes out our show for today.
Yes.
We talked about Snead and who Snead being traded and who is CB2. We talked about a few draft gems from rounds 4 through 7. We talked about 5 of those guys. And then, of course, we had our the mock draft 6.0 where we talked about PMAX mock draft. So with that being said, any last words before we leave?
Well, in closing, there's 2 things. First off, I want to send a happy birthday shout out to my big sister, Marlena Simone Magruder. She's turning 34 today, and happy birthday, big sis. Love you. Also, follow the Chiefs Focus Live YouTube channel for more of our content. Check out Chiefs Focus Live on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. Also hit the subscribe button and don't miss any of our content, especially check out our shows. It's normally on Mondays, but next week we will be off because I also got to go out of town for my disability rights work that I deal with at the Self-Advocate Coalition of Kansas here in Lawrence. And shout out to them. I'll be going in this afternoon. So that's why I wanted to get this all done, because we were supposed to do this on Monday, but just had to get this all out for you guys today. So
life happens.
One time only. Life happens, man. That's how it happens. So anyway, thank you, Thiz, and thank you, everybody, for joining us. And
No problem. But before we leave, I will say our prayers and thoughts go out to the people of Baltimore.
In Baltimore, Maryland, absolutely, yes.
In the wake of the bridge collapsing, being hit by the ship.
Yeah.
Our thoughts and prayers go out to the workers, the people, everybody affected, because this is more wide range than just the people that did get killed in that. But for the people,
it affects the entire city, man. Because I was just there last year, and oh man, I can't.
Not only does it affect the city, I know it could affect how we run the day to day operations, because I know a lot of things come out of that port. A lot of things go into that port, and a lot of things come out of that port. And that bridge is one of the quickest ways to get it in and out of the city. So, just my thoughts and prayers to the people of Baltimore and however far wide that reaches, because that bridge is going to be just seeing that bridge collapse was my heart dropped, man. It really did,
man. I woke up today and saw that, and I apologize if I didn't bring that up. But, yeah, my hearts and prayers goes out to everybody in that as well, too. But anyway.
With that being said. As much as we love it, as much as we love doing these, we had to bring that up. So, on a better note, we look forward to talking to you all and bringing in a new show next week, or not next week, 2 weeks from now. So for PMAC, for me, we are out. Deuces.
Deuces.